Well, we're back here. You're listening to Glenn Coble, and this is On the Air. We are on the air, and we're talking about baseball. It's opening day for Major League Baseball, so we thought we would talk about it today. What do you say? I like it. I like the idea, and I've got all sorts of stuff. In this 45-minute period, we're going to talk about Major League Baseball. Now, we've covered a lot of things about Little League Baseball, but not Major League Baseball, and we will go over that, and I'll give you some interesting facts about it. It's April Fool's Day as well. So now, we talked about that yesterday, I believe, on our show, or a couple of days ago. Here we have a phone call. Let's take our caller.
Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Now, we talked about that yesterday, I believe.
Hello? You're on the air.
Yeah, hello there, Glenn, back again.
We lost you.
Sorry that I had to change gears and get to something else. I knew when I told the person it was going to be AM or PM when you come over, and they said, well, PM, just for a few minutes to pick something up. So got that to take care of. I'll get back to the Little League thing for a few minutes.
Sure.
Don't mind.
No.
Well, I think we went like Little League, and then you advanced in your age group to Pony League.
Yeah.
Then you went to the next one. I think it was the Legion Ball or something like that. Or when you went to high school, if you was a good enough player to make the team for high school, you played high school. And you know, as a coach and your sons and stuff, and all the activities you've been in, helping young people and stuff, support, that the coaches in high school, they don't want you playing sandlot basketball or touch football or nothing like that to get hurt, you know. So anyhow, I think it was Legion, but I played Little League. I played a little bit of Pony League, but it didn't work out for me that the coach would let you play, but then when vacation time come, they wouldn't put you in because you're younger than the older ones, but when vacation comes, they wanted you to come out and fill because those kids went on vacation.
Yeah, sure. Mom and Dad took them on vacation.
yeah, and so that kind of made you, that's the really the good thing about a good coach. They kind of watch that and keep you interested so you aren't discouraged or something like that.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I was talking about the dimensions and stuff of the Little League. We played on like a minor league field here in Marion, and it's called Lincoln Park.
Sure.
You may have heard something they were going to refurbish that or maybe.
Yes. I was involved with that briefly, and then my organization lost the bid, so another organization now is apparently they're going to spend several hundreds of thousands of dollars to upgrade it. Yeah.
Well, I hope it goes through and everything, but there's a lot of things we do that maybe it might work out.
Yeah.
Anyhow, they had the Major League outfield fence still there when we started playing Little League.
Mm-hmm.
And then to put our Little League fence, they put a snow fence out there.
Sure.
Probably in most of them.
I've seen that happen,
So the dimensions is all the same from the rubber into home plate pitching and everything. But here's the big thing, the factor there at Lincoln Park. The area from home plate to the backstop was tremendous. Like maybe, I have to think.
A long way,
Maybe 10 yards, maybe 10 yards. And you know how tough 10 yards is to get into football. But then also, the upkeep there wasn't that great, and there was weeds and stuff back there against the ball. So the ruling back then, if a pitcher pitched the ball and it was a bad pitch and got by the catcher, you could advance the bases. Well, they changed that ruling, and you could only go one base.
Ah, okay, because of the distance,
Because of the lost ball back there.
Yeah.
At night, the dark, the catcher, my God, bases loaded, and they could go around. So anyhow, I'm protecting my rear now on my comment. I was a pitcher, and here in Marion Little League, I was, I don't know if there was very many, but I got a big bold write-up in the Marion Star.
Yeah, very nice.
That so-and-so pitches no-hitter and loses, 7-3.
Really?
Yeah, how can you pitch a no-hitter, they said, and lose 7-3? I said, well, some of our guys wasn't hitting too good.
Yeah.
I said, we're not going to take that. But I said, I threw a bad pitch, too, and bases were loaded. I said, there went 4 runs right now.
But nobody hit. Yeah.
Well, at the fast ball, see?
Yeah, sure.
If there were one or two Von Tagg, you could go around and just keep going all three, come into home, and the catcher's still looking for the ball, and the umpire, he hadn't got a five slice helping you out. But anyhow, Glenn, it was really a thing, and as far as sponsors went, it was like you said, there on our fence, we had banks. My God, we had banks in Marion every corner, filling stations on every corner, and ballers in every section in Marion when I was growing up. I remember that.
And they all advertised, didn't they?
Yeah. But the banks was mostly, they had, and I'll name off a few here just for the heck of it. We had National City, we had Marion County, and we had a sponsor, Isley's. You've heard that name.
Yeah, sure. Ice cream, yeah.
And we had B.F. Goodrich, that was a rubber factory that made rubber hose out on 739.
Sure.
And things like that, those names. And then on our team, I played for National City Bank, and they said, if you hit one over the fence and it goes over the sponsor's name, you'll be awarded $5.
Oh, nice.
Savings bond through the bank. Well, I hit one night, Glenn. And I never seen that $5 savings. But here's the moral of the story, Glenn, and I thought it'd be nice to, if anybody listening, we could have a laugh like I do. It was Marion, when I was playing in 52, well, we had a curfew at 11 o'clock, and if your game wasn't over, it was kind of undecided. You might have to play it over or something. But anyhow, the coach, he told me, he said, hey, when you get up there and bat, you get that warm-up bat, and it was a hardball bat, but it was like a big, full, fat Louisville slugger. And he said, take that bat and get up there. And he said, make it look good now. And I said, okay. I got up there, and we're beating this team like 18-3, and the curfew's coming. We want to win the game and not call on curfew and have to play it again. And I swung, and bases was loaded. And I wanted to make it look as good as I could to strike out, and damn if I didn't hit the ball, knock it put over into the pit. A home run on that one. So, yeah, it was interesting. And Bob Feller, I was out there in Tucson. There was a guy sitting beside me, and I think he was coaching at the time the Texas Rangers pitching staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the ball field wasn't, maybe a half hour from the Tucson where our friends had a home there, and he worked a third shift trick, and he said, hey, I said, I'm going over to ball game in the afternoon, and I said, when you get home, you go to sleep, and then you get up, and then have your wife, my wife, you bring her over to the game, and we'll watch the ball game. He said, good deal. So that's how we saw Bob Feller and
fantastic
out the belt buckle. It said Little League, and so I got a belt buckle in the display cabinet there that since 1952.
Lots of great memories. Yeah,
I was talking there. Did you? And I was asking you because you got a better memory. I followed through in track and cross country, and I played basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Bob Feller and Luke Easter. I remember Luke Easter, and I asked people, I said, you know, ever heard of Luke Easter? And they said, what about Easter? And they thought maybe that's what's coming up now. You know, I said, no, he was a ball player. But I think he played first base, but I was just a little kid, and how you got those big square baseball cards and had the big bubble gum in and stuff.
Yep.
I had a collection of them, and I think everybody that was a young man that played ball.
Oh, absolutely. I did,
too. We played Little League, Pony League, and then Legion Ball, and then high school ball. But I've done basketball and track and cross country in high school.
Well, we all, I really believe that all of our kids should play as many sports as they're capable or as they want to, you know, more exercise.
The most exciting thing I've seen in my life was when young girls and the women got their rights, and they got invited in. And I'm telling you, Glenn, you've probably seen it time and time again, that when our grandson was running track and granddaughter was in the track and field, why the baseball, the softball diamond was right in back of us, so I could go over and watch an inning or two before they run another event. And I'll tell you, Glenn, being an athlete and playing ball, I don't think the high school girl pitching, I don't think I could hit her. I mean that.
Oh,
ball.
No. Yeah. Some of them are very fast.
And you had the same feeling because you're in the same age group as I am.
Yeah.
A lot younger, or not a lot younger, but I always said there isn't no girl going to outrun me. There isn't any girl going to outthrow me. There isn't any girl going to do this or that. Well, I beat them words today. Of course, a little older, but I'm not using that as a crutch.
Yeah.
They are good.
Yeah.
Those in all the sports, the girl. And then if you think you're a big shot, well, look at the Olympic women running.
Oh,
now.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I've taken up enough of your time, but I heard you say a little bit earlier about the girls. You said they was little, one girl in particular, but I thought maybe Little League was a softball, you said. Maybe you meant hardball, but...
No, they had a little girl play in 1951 on the Little League baseball team, and she got away with it for a couple years, and then they threw her off.
But you mentioned Little League of something about softball. Was there a Little League softball?
Yeah, there? Well, I was using the term Little League as not the professional term Little League. See, Little League is actually a copyrighted name, so I shouldn't have used that term. You're right. I meant little girls is what I meant.
Yeah, I didn't know that they had little girls playing back then either, but each state and all over the United States, and I love to watch, don't you, the Little League boys baseball.
I can only watch it so long until one of the kids starts crying. then I have to turn it off because I don't want to cry in front of my wife.
Well, you start crying?
Yeah, I've done that occasionally.
You mean being sentimental about bringing up memories when you was in the era of doing that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, I never seen a Little League player. Them guys, they mean business.
Every once in a while you see one, you know, they'll hit what they thought was a home run and it doesn't go over, and they'll, you know, you can tell they're not feeling real well. Hey, I'm going to have to break because I've got a commercial coming up here in about 15 seconds. So.
Well, I've finished, and thank you much for your time and stuff. And bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Great call.
All right, we're going to break away here for a couple of seconds, about 2 minutes.
Scott, WWGH Radio is my favorite place for news.
Well, Ted, I take that as high praise.
Well, it's true, without a doubt. Where else can you find a mayor, governor, treasurer, and the golden voice all on the same show? Variety is the spice of life.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, the talking place.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Quickly there, so I want to thank our caller. He brought back lots of good memories, and yes, I was involved in college sports when Title IX went through, and so therefore we were able to watch the women start to play more sports and be a little bit more able to afford their sports, and it was quite an exciting time, and my wife was a cheerleader in high school, and and she is by far the best athlete between the two of us. And I asked her one time, why didn't you participate in sports? She said, because they didn't have any sports that I could participate in that I cared about. And I said, well, they had GAA basketball? She said, yeah, that was six-girl basketball, and only three girls could come down. She had all sorts of rules, and she said it wasn't real sports, and she was always disappointed. So she was a cheerleader instead, and a very good one at that. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball, and thank you, by the way, for the caller who gave us all sorts of interesting tales, especially about Marion and previous sports in Marion. But Major League Baseball, you know what the longest game of Major League Baseball was? The longest game was 25 innings, and it was between the Milwaukee Brewers and the Chicago White Sox. Hang on, we got a phone call. We'll see what we have to go with this call. Hi, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Well, Bob, I'm back just for a few seconds, but okay. I wanted to finish that. And the guy up in the stands when I was watching the Rangers play a practice game, he said, look at old Bob Feller out there. He said, I said, yeah. I said, what about Bob Feller? And he said, see how his arm is bowed. And I said, well, yeah. I said, that's from too many curveballs. Yeah. I did not know that. He went and finished the sentence off. He said, that's from too many curveballs. And isn't it admiring how some people really get dedicated into the sports, and when they watch a team, they can tell everything about them and this and that. And I thought that was really interesting to tell a pitcher how he threw so many curveballs. He said, there's his arm like that.
Yikes. Yeah, that sounds very uncomfortable. But, you know, well, if you
did
ever...
Did you ever watch Bob Feller, the Indians, play very much in your younger days?
Occasionally. But I really wasn't into baseball until... I got a little older, and so Bob Feller, I'm not sure when he got out, but that was about the time I collected his baseball card, but I don't really think I got a chance to watch him, because we were in the Chicago area, and very rarely got to see him. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you was in the Chicago Cubs, the guy that drank all the beer during the ninth inning that stretched, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah,
okay, Bob, take care. I mean, Glenn, take care.
Okay, very good. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Interesting stories about Bob Feller. And Bob Feller was a great pitcher. He wasn't just a name that only Indian fans would know. Everybody knew that name, Bob Feller. He was a great pitcher. Anyway, that longest game, 25 innings, was between the Brewers and the White Sox, and that was back in May 8th. 1984, and by the way, the White Sox won that game 7-6, and the game was stopped after 17 innings for much needed rest between the two teams. The score was 3-3. It resumed, and it ended with a 25th inning walk-off home run. And it doesn't tell me who hit the home run. That's a shame. Well, oh, and also, by the way, in 1912 or 1920, the Boston Braves played the Brooklyn Robins, and it went 26 innings, but it ended in a tie. So they really don't count that as the longest game, because they basically are saying it never ended, so it really wasn't a full game. In 1937. William Wheaton from New York's baseball club, the Gothams, crafted a set of rules, and he was really the guy that started Major League Baseball, not Abner Doubleday, who so many people say he invented it in 1839 in Cooperstown, New York. But in fact, there is very little evidence that Abner Doubleday really did invent the game and start it. So they're giving credit to William Wheaton from New York Baseball Club, because he put down the rules, and he also, the major amendment to the rules was three outs per inning, per half inning, basically. That's why they say that Wheaton was the originator of baseball. All right. By the way, Fenway Park, the home of the Red Sox, it's been up since 1912. It's the oldest park in Major League Baseball. And those of us who are Cubs fans, we kind of like to think that Reg Wrigley is the oldest, but it is not. It is not. It was Fenway Park has been renovated many times. And that green monster that's out there, they used to have seating in front of it, and then they moved it to seating on top of it. Now I don't think they have seating at all around the green monster, right? The first game, by the way, under the lights, was in 1880 in Nantasket Bay, Massachusetts. And it was a game, I'm trying to see who it was between. It was between the Yankees and the Dodgers. That doesn't seem right with the date. But anyway, the first World Series took place, by the way, in 1903. we had waited, thus Cub fans had waited since 1908 for the Cubs to win in 2016 for the first time. Obviously, in 108 years, it took us a long time to win our second World Series. But the first World Series was in 1903 between the Pirates and the Boston Americans, who later became the Boston Red Sox. All right. And by the way, Boston won that. The next year, the World Series was canceled. I'm trying to see why. It doesn't really tell me why. The Giants claimed that they were supposed to be in it. The Giants against the San Francisco team. The Giants claimed that the American League was not a real league and went on to declare the Giants as the winner of the World Championship, but they didn't have a game because they claimed that the American League wasn't a real league. All right, let's talk a little bit. I've got a few minutes here. We'll talk until the hour or until the quarter hour is done. About salaries. are you sitting down? This will either make you amazed or it'll make you mad. I'm not quite sure which. Mike Trout of the Los Angeles Angels makes $37,116,666 a year. He's the highest paid baseball player right now. And there was a baseball player that was negotiating for $187 million in a six-year period, 10-year period, whatever it was. And my wife and I sat down and figured out it was $1.03 per second of the whole year, every second. He was getting paid a dollar, and that doesn't sound very much. But you start adding up $1.03 every second. there are 60 seconds in a minute, so $60 in a minute. That's a lot of money. I don't know what you ever do with that type of money. Jacob DeGrom from the Mets is the second. He and Garrett Cole of the Yankees are in second place. They make only $36 million a year. I just, it's like they're winning the lottery every year. A big lottery. In fourth place, there are three people in fourth place. And I'm going to mispronounce some of these names. I'm not a big MLB follower. I am a big Cub follower and a big Indians follower, but I'm not really big at the other teams, so I won't know some of these names, and I'll mispronounce them, so please excuse me. Zach Greinke from Houston. He makes, and also Steven Strasburg of Washington and Nolan Arenado from St. Louis, and I should know that name because St. Louis is the Cubs' big adversary. But anyway, all three of those gentlemen in fourth place, they make $35 million a year. Max Scherzer of Washington, makes $34,503,480 a year. But who's counting? Justin Verlander, he from Houston, he makes $33 million a year. Now, a lot of these guys are pitchers. I'm trying to see what the highest paid non-pitcher is, if I can. I think I've already mentioned it. Shoot. Naturally, I can't find that page. Here it is. Trout is a center fielder, and he's the number one paid gentleman. Now, when I was in sports, we had a guy, Mike Schmidt, who was the very first player to make over $1 million a year. And Mike was a Bobcat, so we knew about him when I was at OU. As a matter of fact, he came to a couple of games. I'm not going to go into a lot of stuff about him, but though he did have some requirements that were a little unusual, like he required that we seat him alone in the stands. By the way, the stands at OU at the time were absolutely free. You could sit anywhere you wanted to, and it was free. They are not anymore. But he required that we rope off an area of about 100 square feet or whatever. He required that we rope off an area so people wouldn't bother him. I guess I understand that. I have been with several of my players and several of my coaches who get pretty much attacked when they go someplace and they're recognized. And I guess I understand that. But anyway, let's move on. Number nine, David Price and Manny Machado. Now we're talking about Machado is a third baseman. We've still got an awful lot of pitchers up here making an awful lot of money. But both of those young men are making $32 million a year. Now this is based on, I think, 2019, not last year, but 2019. Trevor Bauer, Los Angeles Dodgers, he's also a pitcher, makes $31,333,333. There are a lot of threes in his paycheck. I wouldn't mind having that. Why didn't they bump it up to $33,333,333? I don't know. Anyway, nobody makes that amount. Clayton Kershaw, Los Angeles Dodgers, makes $31 million a year in 12th place. And let's see here. I'm getting close to the break. We'll stop here with Chris Sale, Albert Pujols.
You are really a pioneer. You were the first viral video in 2011.
Yes, that is true. But I have a problem since then. I was hoping you can help me with that, Scott.
What's that?
Well, I can't seem to find the right antibiotic to get rid of this viral video.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hey, you're listening to Glenn Coleman. We're on the air, and we're talking about baseball today because it's opening day. And I, as I was finishing there, I'm going to close this out because you probably couldn't hear me. Chris Sale of Boston, Albert Pujols of Los Angeles Angels, and Miguel Cabrera of Detroit all make $30 million, and that takes us through the top 15 players. And I'd say $30 million, that's a nice round number. All right, let's go on to some other of the questions that I have that are kind of interesting. Do you know which Hall of Famer holds the record for shutouts on opening day, which is today? Just a guess. It's Walter Johnson. He has 7. He has 7 shutouts on opening day. That means he pitched a lot of shutouts on opening day. I'm not sure who's second. They don't list who's second, but I bet it's not anywhere near 7, my guess. All right. Just pitching shutout is tough, but on opening day, one of the things I always remember about opening day is it's always pretty cold, especially if you're a Cub fan. April, early April is usually in the 40s, might get into the 50s if you're really lucky. Today is going to be a little chilly for the Indians, I believe, if they're opening today. I'm not sure if they do have an opening game. Who are the only 2 players with grand slams on opening day? There are 2 players, and they are the only 2 players with grand slams on 2 opening days. I'm sorry, not just on opening days, on 2 opening days. Sexto Lezcano in 1978 and 1980, and Hanley Ramirez in 2009 and 2015. Those are the only 2 players to have grand slams on 2 opening days. that's pretty. It's hard enough to get a grand slam on any day, let alone on 2 opening days. But those 2 are the 2 that have 2 opening day grand slams. Who is the most recent Royals player to win the AL Rookie of the Year award? Now, I don't know why they picked on the Royals, but anyway, it was Angel Barroa in 2003. Now, we're getting a little closer to home. Who was the last Pirates player to win a National League batting title? The last Pirates player. Now, I've had a lot of people that say I should be a Pirates fan. Coming from the Chicago area, I just wasn't close enough to the Pirates to be a big Pirates fan. But I like the Pirates, unless they're playing my other 2 teams. But anyway, the last Pirates player to win the National League batting title was Freddie Sanchez. And he batted 344 in 2006. He was the last Pirates National League batting title holder, Freddie Sanchez, 344. You know, I remember when I was young, if you didn't close in on being over 300, you were not a great player. But there are an awful lot of really great players that are batting well below 300 right now, recently. I'm not sure what that means. It does seem that an awful lot of our players are concentrating on hitting home runs as opposed to being, you know, singles hitters. So maybe that has something to do with it. Who has the most opening day starts among active pitchers? The most opening day starts among active pitchers, and we've mentioned his name before. He's making $33 million a year. Justin Verlander. Holy cow. I suppose I don't know, $33 million a year. What do you do with that much money? I know I'd like to try, right? I hear you saying that, right? Who is the only pitcher to win Rookie of the Year unanimously? Absolutely only pitcher who won Rookie of the Year unanimously. And I think that's all writers, I believe, baseball writers. I think that's who selects that. Craig Kimbrel. My mouth got stuck there. Craig Kimbrel of the Braves back in 2011. Now, these voting things, kind of interesting. When I was at DePaul, Ray Meyer was on. He was on the one of the voters for some basketball award. He was one of the voters for who was number 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth, the teams. And there were many a time where Ray would call down to my office and say, Glenn, I haven't got time to do this. Would you do it? So I was the guy that got to select. I didn't throw anybody in there that wasn't supposed to be in there. You know, basically I looked at the week before and then I looked at everybody's records and saw if anybody was on a run, and that's how I picked him. But he didn't do it all the time. But every once in a while he'd give me a call and say, Coble, I need you to do my voting for me this week. So it's not all done by experts. Occasionally some assistant athletic director is allowed to do it. All right, let's move on. Who is the only player born in the United Kingdom to hit more than 100 career home runs? Now, I know that's getting a little bit in the weeds, but the only player born in the UK that had over 100 career home runs was Bobby Thompson. He had 264 home runs, and he was born in Glasgow, Scotland. I wonder how he learned how to play baseball. Scotland isn't big enough to have their own baseball park, are they? I don't, no, they are. I'm sorry. Shouldn't say things like that. As a matter of fact, one of the interesting things, when my youngest, about the time he was getting ready to try out for the Reds, and he was offered a position with a European team as coach player. A head coach and player of a team, and I can't remember the country. But he said, Dad, I don't want to go to Europe. I don't speak the language. And it was a foreign, it was a team in a country that spoke a different language. And they only allowed them in this international league to have two players that were from the United States. And so he would have only had one other friend that could speak to him. And he didn't want to go there. And then what the coup de grace was, he showed me a picture of their baseball diamond, and it was not as good as most of the little league baseball diamonds I have seen. So he never did go to Europe. He would have made a nice salary, and they would have given him airplane tickets to come home a couple times a year, but he just didn't want to do that, and that's fine. His life has been good. Who was the first rookie to win the Cy Young Award? Very first rookie to win a Cy Young Award. Now, this name is very familiar to my baseball friends. Fernando Valenzuela. And that was back in 1981. And he was the very first rookie to win a Cy Young Award. Okay, what am I looking at here? Oh, here's the next question. Who threw the first no-hitter in Marlin franchise history? Now, this is kind of in the weeds because most of us aren't Marlin fans, but it was Al Leiter, and that was back in 96. Longtime Yankees color commentator Susan Waldman was a fan of which major league team growing up? Well, the Red Sox. And some of these questions are a little bit in the weeds for those of us here in the Midwest, right? Those of us who follow Cincinnati teams, Cleveland teams, Pittsburgh, Chicago. We don't know all these things, right? All right. Let's see, who has the most seasons with 200-plus innings pitched and 200-plus strikeouts since the year 2000? Justin Verlander, again. He has 9 seasons like that. Now you understand why they pay him $33 million a year? All right. Okay, David Parker wore number 39 for 6 teams in his 19-year career. Who's the only player in baseball for whom number 39 is retired? The Dodgers Hall of Famer Roy Campanella. How about that? Who was the last player to lead a league in stolen bases the year his team won the World Series? Jacoby Ellsbury of the Red Sox. He had 52 stolen bases, and he led the American League in 2013. Now, there are some records that have been held since 1913, but that was not one of them. Here we go. Which Cub pitcher hit a three-run home run, and I saw it, by the way, off Madison Bumgarner in Game 3 of the 2016 National League Championship? It was Jake Arrieta. And, boy, when he left the Cubs, it broke my heart. But he's back. He is back. He kind of struggled after he left the Cubs. But he's back, and we're hoping he'll do a good job for us. Who are the five Padre pitchers to lead the National League in saves? Raleigh Fingers, back in 77, 78. Mark Davis, back in 89. And Trevor Hoffman in 98 and 06. Heath Bell in 09. And Kirby Yates in 2019. Those are the five Padres to lead the National League in saves. Had a lot of saves. All right, we're getting pretty close to the break. Let's see if I've got any more here that look really good. Which Hall of Famer, Hall of Fame closer served up Ichiro his first career walk-off homer? Mariano Rivera in September 18th of 2009. Well, we're getting a little, let's see if I can find any more of these interesting things. I'm missing out on some of them here, I'm sure. Six of the last seven National League batting titles have been won by left-handed hitters. Who was the lone right-handed hitter in that group? It was Rockies DJ LeMayu, and he batted .348 in 2016. He was the only one, only right-hander. I am lucky enough right now. My grandson is a 6'5", left-handed, 15-year-old pitcher. And he's already been selected by North Carolina University to play baseball for them. So I know a little bit about left-handers and right-handers, but it's going to be fun to watch him playing for the Tar Heels. But he's got a couple more years in high school before he even gets there. So we'll take a break and be right back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LPFM, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. For guests like legendary ABC News correspondent Sam Donaldson.
Over the course of this program, we have had a lot of great guests on. We've had U Downs. We have had David Hartman. We have had Marvin Kalb and Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, Jesse Jackson. Just great people who are no longer with us, Tony Curtis and Phyllis Diller and Jane Meadows and all the great guests we've had over the last 5 years. But today, making a very special appearance with us is a gentleman who's been on before. He is an icon in the world of news without question.